Blog Talk Radio.
Sonic Effects here. It's good to have you sitting in with us today, this second day of a brand new year, 2022. And I must say, what the hell? To be optimistic? Why not? Why not? It's within our nature. It's within our capacity. Well, we might have this internal argument going on about the cynics in the world, and you and I, we have the capacity to be skeptical. Having that sensibility might make us wonderful scientists or artists, but it doesn't necessarily, unless we get a little bit delusional, define their ourselves, gentlemen, ladies. It doesn't define us, or it doesn't define the universe around us. It is one aspect of this wonderful, enormous continuity, as I've been fascinated with the term and the concept more lately, this continuity. None of us has this. There's not much static going on, or at least I haven't been able to find any, except, the concept of opinion. You know, I think I'm sort of toying with that idea that opinions, where we stop absorbing information and form, we have start using opinions, is when we stop. Or when we attempt to stop. And of course, it's feeble. We are always absorbing information around us. Our senses are quite keen. Whether we pay attention to it or not, I will give you that. It's another matter. What we do with that information, yet again, that's carved into the uniqueness of character, the uniqueness of opportunity and experience. But how, as soon as we begin to think that there are limits on the human condition, we are preparing ourselves to be pleasantly surprised and shocked. The ability of human beings to come from adversity, to put adversity behind them and move forward is so creative. It's so beautiful. It's aspirational. And so for somebody, when I look at somebody and I listen to somebody, you know, like you are walking down the street, cynicism seems to ooze from the pores of some withering people. I'm often prone to enjoy the moment because there is that sense, the experience, and it's there if you look for it. It's not just my experience. I'm not speaking anecdotally here, that the world is also aspirational, and look at it for what it is. Right now, my world is in tones of gray, and I call it dense. There's a density to this kind of experience, and it leaves me that opportunity, the beautiful opportunity, as if I need an excuse to be sitting with a good cup of espresso, my goodness, and a book and some music, you know, and the I call it an indulgence, and I don't know what you would make of it. Just idle time, I suspect, the cynics would say. Idle time, it's not productive. You know, you're not turning a profit. Well, that's the marketplace that's dominated the narrative, or tried to dominate the narrative for a long time for a lot of people. I'm not going to talk about weak-willed, weak-minded people. That's I think those are folks that deserve our best ideas, our protection, in a sense, the protection up to a point, not to the extent where I'm going to get into a quarrel with somebody who is parched across a desert, who pushes my hand offering a cup of cool water aside. No, I may offer it a second time out of surprise. But the third, the pattern, no, I'm not going to repeat that. I'll respect that, unless there's some aberration that I can pick up. And there's always aberrations. It's like I'm thinking fondly of a very angry little man who was brought up to be an angry little man, and he struggles with it now in his old age, where he knows the difference. He knows that there's something within him that has been unfulfilled. I don't know. I don't know. I don't think it's for my place to be out there. The critics would say you're just rescuing. You're building yourself up to feel better, or are you sharing the abundance of thought, the abundance of ideas? And it gets around, comes around to this notion of continuity. My history, like yours, didn't. There's a spark out of nothingness. There has always been continuity. You and I are that current awareness of a continuity that began when? Who's to say? Who's to determine it? But we know it was then, and we know that it one generation evolved into the next and the next and the next. And one relationship, one sensibility, one understanding, one coincidence. And so when we're in history, does wonders for us. As my very, very dear Mason and friend, Michael Jenkins, we're thinking of you today, Michael. They, as you recline in the care of some health professionals, good on you. You know, you like to be the center of it. Have to tease him a little bit. He'd do the same to me. Come on, cut it out. They introduce this notion of continuity to us all the time. A window, think about it. We're saying, well, you know, history is a window. You know, my goodness, what happens when you close that window to take that snapshot? What happens to all of the events? Nothing. Well, how do you know that? Are you making that up? How do you know that nothing happens? It is what it is when you look at the world as static. I guess it would be like killing the tree in order to study it. Or these wonderful marvels that would politicians that would kill, and you can tell I'm not a big fan of politicians, no, because I can't tell who's there talking to me. You know, contriving notions so they could kill animals. We're going to kill them all. It's like the father that beats his children in order to teach them. I'm doing this for your own good. Yeah, okay. Keep telling yourself that. In that misery, you can do that. Honestly. So think of you've succumbed. Nobody told you about these aspects of masonry, but you're the better off for them. Brethren, it's all hail Pythagoras. Go and do your own. You know, I'll share some aspects again today, but do your own scratching at the scraps of history. Do you know, pick them up and look at. He's a guy that that had this notion of friendship, and to think that this, you know, I guess to think that the writers of our scripts of our ritual came out of nowhere. It's what they're some ethereal kind of being. This fellow, the little that we know about, tells us that he taught that friendship was the truest and nearest perfect of all relationships. But and I think there's an interesting explanation that he illustrates that a friendly, perfect stranger is a more intimate relationship than somebody that is well-known but unfriendly. Oh, I know. If you've rushed, a little caffeinated, if you've rushed to the sense of thinking about what's going on, don't. Think about what's going on around us. Don't. It's registered. You know darn well what friendliness to do. In professional or intellectual environments, it's a friendly. It's that a tone that comes out of confidence, where you no longer need to be bragging, or you no longer need to be aggressive. Like, oh my goodness, you know, you can actually have that joie de vivre. You can actually share information and ideas without feeling threatened. Meanwhile, you learn that, and don't necessarily succumb to the idea that this is all that there is, but the fact that you're aware of the struggle that other people have around you is defining a relationship, and it is a friendliness, because as you're aware of it, you have choices that further define you and me to the world. We have choices. How do we handle that? Do we assume what my grandfather assumed with me, and probably your grandfathers or fathers or some influence? Maybe it's that stranger that mom told you never to talk to. The influence, you succumb to that influence. That grandfatherly instruction. He wasn't looking at the silliness, never looked at the silliness of what I said or did, the experimentation. Yeah, it is pathetic when you see a father that leaps to the occasion to judgment of his own offspring. How grim. How grim. If you're trying to portray that as some type of learning, then again, you're holding the switch, beating sense into the child, aren't you? Always that undercurrent of aggression. But if it switched, the love is when it is what makes patience easy. The love and joy, your own, is what helps with a realistic analysis, a truthful analysis. Oh, you're worried that this might generate some sense of superiority. Is that what's up? That somehow you're better than the rest? Well, we are all prone to this to probability. We don't know what tomorrow will bring. Truly. So we strive to do our best. So tomorrow I have a stroke and it affects my personality. And all of a sudden I'm very, very aggressive and an unpleasant thing to be around. Not at all the way I was. Charming and with the sun shining out of me. Bringing effervescence into the room with me. No, it's that grimy struggle. I'm going to dominate the room by being ugly. I've met a few of these. You know, you've met them too. Really, they actually, they're like you know, naughty little boys. They're trying to impose their will on a room. It's like, I think in most lodges, they've run into a room full of people that really don't care for their, are not prone to being influenced by that kind of nonsense. You know, it's ridiculous because it just takes away from that, the point of it. Pythagoras was suggesting that friendship was the truest and near perfect well relationship. Well, ritual, our very modest ritual picks up on that theme. Oh, if you weren't taught that, I'm here to ask you, what in the world are you waiting for? You knew this. You didn't need to be told. Are you thinking that? All right, I won't judge you too harshly. Are you thinking that you wouldn't? If you've been prone to a form of masonry where actual men are using it as an opportunity, using their position, using masonry as an opportunity to compensate for some inadequacies. Everything is order, command and control. If that's your version, perfectly fine. But that's not the totality of masonry. That's a glimmer. I think of it as a bit of the effect of the environment on. It's like rust. We accumulate rust. The actuality is closer to the teachings, the material that was extracted and brought together in this very tidy notion of ritual. Even the looseness, you know, the looseness of the second degree, it's there. It has purpose. It has purpose. Not something you're going to get into today, unless somebody would be calling me and asking. Of course, I'd love to have that kind of conversation. But truth be known, we have a choice. And if you're reminded, I think it's perfectly reasonable for you to remind me. You know, the fellows are struggling. They're meager. And it's the weight of the world on their shoulders. You know, they're drained. They've lost that sense of connectiveness. They don't trust. It's not us that they don't trust. It begins at home. It begins with themselves. Do they trust themselves? And on that note, I'm going to talk to you today about, we're going to share an interesting program for you, I think, and engaging, if I must say myself. We have the poetry of Percy Shelley. And I'd like you to think about this sense of trust. Trust that is reflected in the work of a poet. Here he's assuming, and you know, he's been, if you think, how would any of us fare if generations of very, very intelligent people analyzed our writings and looked at connections in our backgrounds, in our personal histories? How would we fare? Mm-hmm. Well, Percy Shelley went that extra step. Very interesting young man. Very, very interesting. But today I'm going to share with you this idea of trust. And it's through his poem Mont Blanc. It's one that he started writing when he was very young, but we'll get into that. I think you'll see if I do it justice, you'll begin to see the connections, the trust. And I think I'm of the mind where I don't necessarily think that there's boundaries. I remember thinking about the boundary years ago that real men don't wear pink, And I thought, oh, that's kind of interesting. I wonder what, you know, it's a color. And where was that? How did that become associated with gender? Well, then I know you fans of Bob Dylan are going to talk about smoking the same cigarettes as me. You know, our brand of cigarette makes us a man. Or if I have a temper tantrum about these notions, it makes me a man. Yeah, of course not. The only years later, you know, you find out that that whole notion of blue is for boys and pink is for girls is manufactured. it's a business scheme to sell more product. Oh my goodness. Don't you feel silly? All these years you thought that you were being a real man by avoiding. And all that homophobia that goes with that. Mustn't talk about that out loud because it's a little too frank and too honest. And it speaks volumes about our condition. Judgment, if you're looking for fuel to judge and condemn yourself and create an angry environment, you don't need any help from me. You're quite capable all on your own. There are people that can find fault in a sunny day or a light, warm breeze or a beautiful song, or they can actually find fault. And you think, I just want you to think, it's unlike you. When you're walking through a forest trail here in Canada, you hear the sounds and you feel the textures and the temperatures, and you're piecing together all this information because our world here changes colors. Different seasons changes colors. We are colorblind. We're color sensitive. I think Canada is not colorblind. We're color sensitive. It connects us. We're looking for connection. And this environment, you come here and nature encourages it. We are enormously fortunate for that. But that aspect you can find anywhere you are. You can find anywhere you are. It's a state of mind. It's like we can put you in a cage, but we can't jail your spirit. Nobody can. To think that something as beautiful as Freemasonry amounts to control and command, we are seeing the results of that now, aren't we? I'm not not. If you're thinking that here I am getting defensive, I'm not talking about the military lodges. That's entirely different. That's identity. That's beautiful. And there's a simplicity to it with those gentlemen and women, of course. Masonry itself is not defined that way. For them, it is. It's like it defining what you see from your worldview of the moon. Well, is that the same as his way over there, 10,000 kilometers away? Well, no. But it's still the moon. There's a beauty to it. If you think a bit about yourself as the compass, where is the compass point avoiding in terms of your character, of your being, of the universe around? Where does it just sort of skip? And on that face of your compass, there are realities. And you can make of them as you will. But the idea that masonry is, it makes you laugh, doesn't it, when you think this is the area where this is something, this is an entity in a way, a phenomena, a way of thinking in which merit matters. And look what we've done with it. Oh, in slippery slope, rightly so, but it's also has some mathematics that go along with it. And if you don't do the math, as my old teacher, Mr. Whittle, would tell you, you have to prove your work, Graham. You have to prove your work. So prove your work, gentlemen. In the meantime, I'm 2022. This starts the 11th year for Masonic Effects. Started off as Masonic Companion, Masonic Home Companion, to bring masonry to people that weren't able to attend. And at the time, there was just a fierce debate that they were inadequate, terrible people. But I didn't buy it. I thought, I have this tool, I'm curious. I'd like to dialogue and have connections with these people wherever they are. And then, my Lord, look at this. The internet says, well, I can bring this to, we can connect from your home in Turkey or your home in Germany, or we can save ourselves how many hours flight to Australia? Yeah. And we can still carry on in our responsibilities there and just share a little bit of time. And it made sense. Here we are 11 years later. It was Boxing Day. When this started. So we've just tipped past that, walked past that actual date. So I'm very happy that you've been able to sit in today. And maybe we'll have this conversation again in another 10 years, or maybe you will with my successor. But nevertheless, in the meantime, yeah, good poetry, good the music. Well, you know, what else? It's the new year. What else would you expect? Yeah, we'll get back into some jazz in a minute, but check this. It's an absolute pleasure. Thank you. Ah, nostalgia, reflection, think back. Not restorative nostalgia, reflective nostalgia. I never want to go back to recreate what was there. I already did that. Let's see what's coming next. Ah, I started the year with a commentary that speaks about us. Us, observations. It's easier, it becomes easier if you're a student of observation, you know. Oh, the unfolding of the sciences around is just a miracle, some miracles going on. The James Webb Space Telescope, I hope you and I get to share some of the results of that. $10 billion, I don't even know what that means anymore. I've lost all sense of scale. I'm still amazed at the science, the technical ability to make that, to create this, the thinking, a universal effort in spite of the politics and the jingoism. No, it's a universal, it's a universality. And look at the celebration. The possibility of seeing the first light as it emerges. What are we looking at? 18.3 billion years ago. Whew. Very, very interesting. But this symbolism, growth, and will. We begin similarly with impressions. If you have wondered about the learnings, when surrounded by the chaotic nature of others, you are not alone. The stories we tell one another help define us. We quickly dissolve into anecdote, during which we recount personal experiences, often as a solution to some intemperate problem. Because I experienced X plus Y equals AO, it is a pattern in my mind. Therefore, I offer it as an answer to today's need for coordination. Anecdotes are interesting stories, more than impressions that reveal relationships. They too dissolve into opinion. Opinion happens to take over from the pursuit of knowledge because they rely totally or on past experience through opinion and an assumption that they can be lifted from my context then to your context now. As much as we might compete for dominance, we are still limited to idiosyncratic impression. Is your impression better than mine? It's ridiculous, eh? But something makes sense, doesn't it? There's a logic. And some things are bizarre and hard to follow, yeah. But they raise an almost stereotypic comparison. And in that, they are very useful. Is the opinion factual or is it based on belief or unprovable assertions inserted when fact is absent? Impression, anecdote, opinion, or fact? Which is your truth? Or is truth deterministic? Which is reliable? Does masonry aspire to illustrate? In all these lanes, we cannot challenge beliefs. Only the mind can do that. Is the anti-vaxxer lying in an ICU begging to be vaccinated, making that change when told it's too late? Is that when belief becomes fact? Or is it the pursuit of happiness by indulging the senses? Whatever the driver, it raises a question about reality. Do we manufacture it, or is it awareness based on fact that we search? The more we absorb by observing continuity of history. No beginning, no end. The greater our perspective changes. Is that continuity a singularity we share? Or particles equals waves of insight? It takes a strong will to hold us in balance. I find myself asking, where to draw the greater strength? Is it drawn from the past? But that only exists in the subconscious. Or is it drawn from observation? I don't know. Thank you. It was bound to happen. It was bound to happen. That's a music cover in the style of Bill Evans. It's a tribute, isn't it, to the man? But you'll notice the difference if you listen to Bill Evans. If you're fans of Bill Evans, it's like listening to Keith Jarrett. You know that texture, that intimacy. You don't just make that happen with a note or key. How many of us pay much attention to what's going on around us? If you're thinking, oh my goodness, it just will suck the oxygen, to suck the air out of my lungs. I'd like to remind you that just a simple reminder that this is something you do all the time, but you rarely give yourself credit for it. Rarely. I mean, human, I'm going to say that just generally. To be aware of our own state of awareness. I know I'm not talking about the insufferable little dickhead that, you know, is bringing that to everybody's attention. I'm using my kale smoothie here and pay attention to it because no, I'm not doing that. The awareness is something that we do. Little kids, do you watch little kids? They don't know. We have to teach them a risk. So we have to, mom and dad have to keep an eye on them because they'll wander wherever their glance goes. It's new information. And to the saddling that think that children treat children as if they should know better. You're the role model there, dude. You're the one that's instructing. They have some rudimentary neurology going on, information stored in there, but it's you. So passing along the harshness, good man. Does that make you feel good inside? Do a little innocent. Kids are so naturally curious. They're observant. What is that? What happens if I walk up? Well, mom goes frantic. Dad goes frantic. And they're yelling, this is a risk. Well, we want to, we have to teach our children about risk. We don't want the little sod to step out in front of a bus. And just because they're wandering and looking at the blinking light across the way or the puppy that's distracted them. No, we don't. We have to instill the sense that there is risk in this beautiful paradise. And as soon as we impart that to you and you're able to make your own judgments, you can be as safe as we can help. And then only pray that your awareness is triggered by risk too. But in the meantime, there is something else that often seems almost a privilege, that children who are raised in the environment of an adult who is aware will be encouraged. So how many of us were encouraged? I certainly wasn't encouraged. Look at the arts. No, my goodness. Why would you do that? That's why? There's no. Are you making money? How are you going to pay for your bills? That's irresponsible to think that way. Well, to all the people that have dropped out of law school because they were there because they were forced, and then they got to the point where they just shook their head and said, this is it for the rest of them. No. And that's not to discredit that struggle to enter a noble profession. No, each to his or her own. But awareness. This echoes through the work of this guy, Percy Bysshe Shelley. He had a interesting guy. He was the heir to rich estates acquired by his grandfather. That's where the Bysshe name comes from. His grandfather was a very overbearing type, and Shelley was rebellious. But at the time, they sent him off to Eton, where they've been producing British prime ministers for how long? and subjected to the boy to the usual mental and physical cruelty that goes on there, as if that's how you make a real man. Look at, yeah, okay, and they negligent little bunch, but this guy pushed back. Despite his, he took off. You know, all he had to do was breathe, go with the flow, be a rich man, and do what Grandpa and Dad said. But he eloped with the younger daughter of a London tavern owner, and when he married her, he was telling the world that he was not interested in the acquisitions, the plans of his grandfather and father. So they tried to starve him into submission. Yeah, nice bunch, eh? That's control. That's the degradation of the human condition. And what shall he do? That just pissed him off. So early in 1812, Shelley and his new wife, Harriet, and her older sister, Eliza, went to Dublin. And he began circulating pamphlets advocating political rights for Roman Catholics. Oh, my. Autonomy for Ireland and free-thinking ideals. Truth to power. And you can tell what happened. He issued more. He went to Devon, and then he issued more pamphlets in the North Wales. But the lack of money finally drove him to moneylenders in London, where in 1813 he issued Queen Mab, his first major poem. Had to make some money, eh? Had to live. And it was the lyrics for the attacks on the evils of the past and present. Get this, commerce, war, the eating of meat, the church, monarchy. His brother's wondering if he's read Pythagoras and all these things, all these conventions, you know, be careful. But it ends with these hopes for humanity when freed from these vices. So in June that year, Harriet had a baby, had their daughter, a little girl. And a year later, Shelley fell in love with Mary Wollstonecraft Godwin, the daughter of William Godwin. And against Godwin's objections, Shelley and Mary taking with them Mary's stepsister Jane. Oh, do we want to know what happened to his first? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And his responsibilities to Harriet? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But he went through France and Switzerland and Germany, and then he returned to London, and they were shunned by the family, the woman's, Godwin's, and most of their friends. Like, the guy was, you know, look, how do you have responsibilities? These are got people to walk away from me. So I'll be honest with you. They're not my favorite people to be around, and I'll find some polite excuse to avoid you. But the creditors came after him. He was ducking them, you know, real healthy lifestyle. Eh? But as he's settling near Windsor around 1815, not long later, Henry was reading the classics with his school friend Hogg. This is a fellow that he had met at Eton, and they'd been turfed out for doing an anonymous article about the need for the purpose of atheism. Of course, Shelley wouldn't apologize for it, so they kicked him the hell out. But this is where he composed the poems, Hymn to Intellectual Beauty and Mont Blanc. I'm going to share Mont Blanc. And Mary, yes, this is the Mary of the author of Mary Shelley, Frankenstein. So Shelley's party returned to England and settled in Bath. And late in the year, Harriet Shelley drowned herself in London. Mm-hmm. And in 1816, Shelley and Mary were married with the Godwin's blessings. But court decision declared Shelley unfit to raise his daughter. And Charles, his daughter, Auntie and Charles, and they were placed in foster care at his expense. Anyway. That's the guy. So We know that he met 1818 Shelley and Byron, met in Venice. We know he was a poet and unbounded, and we feel good about this. So today I'm going to share with you observations of this cat. I don't think, and this is where I wonder, you know, there's some things like, do I want to associate with that type of man? The athlete or celebrity who is beating up the coward, you know, beating up his wife and children. I want nothing to do with them. Do I enjoy their music or their writings or their work? I have a moral dilemma with that. I do. Maybe it's not such a dilemma after all. Here we're looking at Mont Blanc. Look at it for what it is. Look at it for what it is. It's notable. And he tells us about the thrust, the relationship between the natural world and the human imagination. As if, you know, let's turn a blind eye to the kind of person he was. And just look at what his thinking was, his contribution. He's considered one of the foremost poets of the English language. The everlasting universe of things flows through the mind and rolls its rapid waves, now dark, now glittering, now reflecting gloom, now lending splendor, where from secret springs the source of human thought its tribute brings, of waters with a sound but half its own, such as a feeble brook will oft assume in the wild woods among the mountains alone, where waterfalls around it leap forever, where woods and winds contend, and a vast river over its rocks ceaselessly bursts and raves. Here he's picking up nature, comparing it to powerful waterfalls. The water bursts and raves over the rock. Nature is a force to be reckoned with rather than a placid or gentle presence. Getting away from the kind of notions, the embrace of Wordsworth, the points that he had made in his work, Tintern Abbey. Nature has a sound but half its own. The human mind creates the meaning of the landscape, and you need death. Both the human imagination to identify and register human nature's power. You need to register the power. It's not enough to sense. It's like here, there's a tree that falls in the forest when nobody's around. Is there a sound produced? Well, you need to acknowledge the sound, and then you acknowledge it from a tree falling. Thus thou ravine of Arve, dark, deep ravine, thou many-colored, many-voiced vale over whose pines and crags and caverns, fast cloud shadows and sunbeams, awful scene. The idea is both beautiful and terror-inducing. It can be so vast and powerful in that it inspires not only imagination but fear within us. Violent storms, canyons, mountains. These are nature at its biggest and most powerful. This goes on, but I'm going to leave that. Any more than that, you need to have the advantage of your own focus. It's particularly pertinent for us here in Canada, I think. People like you, anywhere in the world, can you connect the work, the ideas of Shelley with your own experience? And then in this, I don't know. Obviously, would you want to be around this fellow? He doesn't. Would you want to be in his company? And often, I would like to think that there was some gentility in this man. And I don't know if it's history just assassinating his character, but it's hard to think the effect he had on whether he was the cause or contributed to his first wife, to Harriet's suicide, or certainly his children being taken into care was a pretty telling. Anyway, Happy New Year, Percy Bysshe Shelley. Whoa. Here. What do you think? 1934, Duke Ellington recorded that. It's called Solitude. We're scratching at the surface of the impressions that we leave in the world. It helps us, I think, to understand ourselves as an order. Just a little better, with a little more clarity. This is the part of history. You know, we've been examining through the historian Margaret Jacobs the events around Amsterdam, and between the establishment, let's put it that way, and Freemasonry, and they were pushing back. And here she goes on to try to analyze the nature of that. Here, and I think she does a very apt job, as she says, there was this contentious suspicions, particularly triggered by a reaction to the behavior of two brothers. And we don't know what their character was like. We've just finished talking about Percy Bysshe Shelley. Wonderful work, yeah. Mm-hmm. But look at the character. Not the same, eh? Certainly not somebody that we would normally want to have consider a brother. Except if he was your brother, you'd do the right thing and be there for him. The Masons of Amsterdam depicted their detractors gripped by passions and prejudice, overbearing and proud. In the Masonic mind, the detract represent the world and its attempt to brand the ceremonies and secrets of Freemasonry as childish and senseless, as magical and Talmudic. From that quarter, even more sinister accusations depict the Brotherhood as wallowing in luxury and sensuality, claiming that their stomachs are their god. At issue between the detractors of Freemasonry and its defenders in the first instance is worldliness. The Freemasons denounce their accusers as blinded by the world, but by this they mean by ignorance. They depict themselves as healthy in relation to it, neither sheltered from it nor afraid to use the passions in the service of hard work or to address the needs of society. We may deduce that these detractors are conventionally religious and puritanical. We are asked to believe about their bodies. In the most telling phrase, the difference between the Freemason and people around him is described as being like the speaking of a different language. This is not a quarrel about an abstract set of ideas about enlightenment per se. This is a dispute about how to live in the world. This new and foreign form of sociability appears to have satisfied the need for a different set of ethical norms. The heart of the quarrel is with traditional values, in particular with traditional religiosity, in short, with the values, mores, and beliefs of Dutch Calvinism. Nothing like making it easy, huh? Nothing like making it easy. Is this prevalent today? Yeah. That takes a bit of thinking, doesn't it? Takes a little bit of thinking. Here. All this talk about friendship and shackles. This is a piece by Oscar Peterson Trio with Clark Terry sitting in, old friends. It's a favorite of mine. This is an old recording, too. My goodness. It's got Ray Brown and Ed Thigpen with them. Bless you, Oscar. We wrap up another version, another show here on Masonic Effects. And as usual, I do hope it's been informative or entertaining. I would like to have the opportunity to talk with you over a glass of wine or sitting on a park bench about some of these ideas when it seems right, when we need to. And I'd like to know your observations, what you make of so much of what's happening around us. Masonry gives us is a catalyst for us to meet, to talk and to share these ideas. And you notice that we've been moving away from the discussions about Spinoza and Kant and their thinking about Plato and Aristotle. There's so much interesting material there that we can look at and probably should in the future here in the program. The history, it seems to punctuate what's happening around us today. When we look at our history, it is as if we are, I don't know if it's in cycles. I don't even know if it's circles, although I have some very, very bright Masons telling me that we move in, you know, time is moving in circles and loops. But I don't know. I don't know if it's just a continuity beam of light and we're on it at any one spot at any one time, but it is always moving. I hope that we've been, we've contributed a little bit to your week. And of course, 2022, we've made it. And we make of it as we will. We face hardships, but we've done that before. We can stand strong. We will attempt to correct insurrection and wrongdoing, to be aware, to be a moral person, and to contribute, to push back on the evil and ignorance that's around us, but to do it thoughtfully, to do it intelligently. And we're not going to blow anything up or be in a pitch battle with any of these forces, but we will be there, and we will be challenging. See, the one thing about all this despotism that's going on around is that it doesn't do well with light. Light is still one of the strongest disinfectants you can find. Thanks for being here, and commit those acts of random Masonic kindness. You're lovely people. See you again.